Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, everybody, another episode of the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in and spending part of your day with me. I really, really appreciate each and every one of you that is part of the audience. And while I know that you are not exactly part of the conversation when you're just listening, I definitely feel like you are in the room with me when I'm talking to these guests every week. I'm trying to bring you, useful, helpful, inspiring, maybe, information and inspiration that hopefully will make a difference to you. You know, not every episode, but hopefully some of these in here really maybe are even life-changing. That would be wonderful. Today's episode is an interesting conversation. I've got two guests, which I don't often do. Gets a little bit, hard because we talk over each other a little bit. But this one's really fascinating because it's a husband and wife who have written a book because she is a marriage therapist and he is a divorce lawyer. So over the course of their 30-plus year relationship together, they have these conversations about the kinds of issues that, are so difficult for couples, whether those couples are showing up in therapy or whether they're showing up to get a divorce. And that's part of what I really wanted to talk to them about is what have they learned, not just in their own personal life and their long marriage, but her work as a therapist, where does that cross over into where people give up and end up in divorce? What are these really hot button issues that are so difficult? How can people be handling these so they don't end up in the divorce lawyer's office, unless that's really what's best? I mean, certain people are going to get divorced and that's the right thing. It's not like everybody should stay together, but it's a shame when some of these issues might be able to get resolved, might be able to deal with them and then not need to break up a marriage. So I am talking to David and Julie Bullitt today. You're going to hear both of their perspectives on this about what they call the four core conversations for couples. I hope you enjoy it. The Better Sex Podcast is brought to you by the Sex Without Stress online course. It's a course for couples to escape the cycle of disappointment, avoidance, and pressure in your sex life. So if you're in a pretty good relationship, there's a lot of love and goodwill, but sex is your struggle, this could be for you. You work in the privacy of your own home and at your own pace to create a sex life you can both look forward to. If you want to learn more, go to sexwithoutstress.com/program. So, David, Julie, thank you so much for being with me today.
Well, thanks for having us, Jessa.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, I like having two guests. I don't do it very often, so we'll have to juggle the speaking time, but that's okay. Could you start by just telling me a little bit about the two of you and how you're sort of two sides of a coin here around couples issues?
Sure. Julie, go ahead and start.
Sure. So we are a married couple. We've been married for 33 years. We've been together longer than that. We had a couple year dating and engagement. So we've been together for quite a while. I was actually 18 when I met David at the University of Maryland. Yeah. So I've been with him for a really long time. And we've been married 33 years. We have four daughters. I am a family therapist, and I've been doing that for about 30 years. And David is a divorce attorney. So we have very different perspectives on relationships and marriages. We've been together a long time, which means that there's a lot of interesting things that have happened in our relationship over the years.
Right.
Sure. And we... Yeah, just a few. And a couple years ago, we decided that, hey, wouldn't this be a cool book to share with people, the conversations that we've had between each other professionally and personally. And we did that. And the book was launched this week. We're super excited about it. It's called The 5 Core Conversations for Couples. And you can get it pretty much anywhere you can get books.
Yeah, cool. David, yeah. What do you want to add to that?
Yeah, so what I would say to, what I would say to you is that obviously Julie and I come at these kinds of things from very different places. Sort of what we kind of figured out after all these years of sitting around, whether it was, you know, hanging around the house at the kitchen table, having a drink, or, you know, on the beach or in the bathtub or wherever it may have been, was that we dealt with a lot of the same issues and we had a lot of the similar conversations topically with people, but for different reasons and from different angles, you know?
Okay.
So, and then ultimately what would happen is I might say, oh, this is what happened in my office today, or this person told me this or that. Julie would say, oh, did you do such and such? I'm like, no, I didn't do that. I wouldn't think about that. And,
that's what a therapist would do, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
and vice versa.
Right, exactly.
So that is sort of what the genesis of it was, is that a lot of these, and Julie's sort of a creative character and can be inappropriately funny on occasion. And so we started making notes of those things. We built from those conversations and we took, and you know, our conversations aren't any different than what you have with your significant other or everybody else has. It's just that it's a different perspective, I think, to some degree, because we have that professional piece built in. So it's looking at it differently, responding to the same set of facts, you know, very, very differently. You know, it's that old commercial, you know, perception is reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she perceives things one way, I might perceive it completely differently. And that sets us off on a lengthy back and forth often.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got these 5 conversations. Are those topics that couples get into,
so the
big stumbling blocks or pitfalls or something? Is that?
Yeah. So if you think about it, you know, you think about any relationship, right? What are the major areas that people either need to talk about or don't talk about enough, or that you need to talk about to build a relationship? So the book is sort of broken in that way, in these 5 cores or 5 buckets. So you think of, all right, what do we do at first? At first, we got to kind of get to know each other, get a sense of whether we have something that's going to stick. How do we keep building that relationship? And during the course, as the relationship grows, obviously folks have come into my office and Julie's too, have conflicts pertaining to money, have conflicts pertaining to kids, have conflicts pertaining to sex. So there's 3 of the other buckets.
Right.
And the last one is just sort of, how do you keep that relationship filled? How do you keep growing not only as a couple, but also individually? And so that's basically your 5 cores that we call them.
Okay. Yeah. It sort of aligns, I mean, pretty closely with what I think of as the big 4: sex, money, parenting, and then in-laws, which you're not mentioning, but that's another one.
That's the next book.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That will be. Yeah. No, in-laws are, you know,
Right. And so in these, funny. I mean, one of the things I'm thinking going into this conversation, I think it would be really, hopefully you guys have some insider ideas about this, is how do couples have struggles in these areas and work that out, maybe with a therapist, rather than end up in a divorce lawyer's office, right? Like because you guys are seeing people that are struggling when they're still trying to work it out versus wait and stop even trying, you know, and what causes people to give up and get divorced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, for me, what I see, you know, first of all, everybody is very different as to when they would go to a therapist. Some people, you know, that is sort of like never.
Right.
Then there's people that sort of like do it as a last resort. Like, okay, this is, you know, we're going to get divorced if we don't try this. And then there's people that are very proactive with therapy. So, you know, you kind of see different stages. I mean, I have clients that will come in for just checkups, like things are going fine, but they just wanted to discuss a few issues with me and just check in to make sure that they're doing okay. And so that's, you know, those marriages are usually very healthy marriages that, you know, just want to make sure that they're, you know, fine tuning things and keeping things moving in the right direction. So, you know, the people that don't come into therapy at all or would never go to therapy or tried it and it didn't work, then they end up in, you know, in David's office.
Yeah, I mean, I find the same thing, right? If people are coming in at the very, they put it off, or it's a last resort, or it's, you know, it's the very last stop before divorce, it's much harder to help them, right? Resolve those long-standing issues. Yeah.
And some people are just doing it to, you know, to say that they did it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. That's nothing new. So that so toggles into, you know, sort of what Julie makes a joke about, and that's my big four. My big four, the four reasons that people come to my office. Oftentimes it's a combination, but at least I guarantee you one of those reasons are there, and that is just pretty much what you identified, less the in-laws, which is money, sex, kids, and then I borrow from your therapist the DSM and say general malaise not otherwise specified. So right. So one of those four or some combination thereof generally gets is I guarantee you during an hour conversation that I have with someone the first time, those topics, at least one of them, if not all of them, sometimes are part of the discussion as to why they're there.
Right, right. Hey, David, I don't know if you know this, but roughly how many of the people that end up in your office moving towards divorce have gone to therapy, you know, have put in what seems like an actual good faith effort to try to make things better versus, well, we went once or twice just to say we tried everything. Or didn't go at all.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I don't think it's more than half.
Oh wow!
I would say maybe half, and maybe if I had to wager whether it was above or below, I'd say probably a little bit below. You have a lot of folks who say, you know, it's not worth it at this point. I don't know what other people do in their office, but I always encourage people to try. I mean, especially folks who've been married a while. It's one thing, you know, somebody shows up and, you know, we met down in the Keys and we got married 3 weeks later and now it's a month after that. And then, oh God, I made a big mistake, right, you know, while I was roaming Duval Street kind of a thing. Yeah. It's another thing if you've got, you know, 12 years, 15 years, 20 years or more in with kids and houses and investment in emotions other than just, you know, just the two of you. You have a lot of strings and ropes and connections. So I always encourage people to go, but to be honest with you, I would say half or more either haven't or don't have the inclination.
Yeah.
By the time they've gotten to me.
Yeah. And I think that people definitely can get to a point where it's kind of too late. Like at least one of them are really just done, you know? So yeah. I think by the time they're ending up with a divorce attorney, that's probably where they are, but it's unfortunate, you know?
Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true.
One of the quotes in our book that is from our trainer, Tammy, was a conversation that we're having. And she said to another person, listen to Julie so you don't need David.
Yeah, right. Right. Exactly. I mean, that would be the hope, right?
Yeah. So that was sort of like a funny quote, but it's true.
It was a good fit. Oh, that's right. Yeah, It made its way into the book, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Should we talk a little bit about each of those core conversations and how, you know, how you see that differently or how it shows up differently in a couple who's working on stuff versus a couple that's coming in for divorce?
Absolutely. You want to start with the Jules?
Sure. So the first core conversation is building and filling. And we talk a lot about, you know, the newness of relationships and checking to see, you know, if you're well matched, whether you have the same values, whether you both want to have kids, whether you both, you know, feel like both people working is a good idea. So sort of like the building, but the sort of newness and funness, but also how do you keep, you know, the maintenance up on that? So, you know, just really checking in, having, you know, good conversations and date nights and those kinds of things. So building and filling the relationship is the first core that we talk about. And then,
so let me interrupt you for a second. Hang on a second. So you're probably, Jessa, thinking, okay, well, you know, this is nothing that I haven't heard before, right? I mean, this is what you do. You know, you've seen it. There's a million sort of self-help books out there. Why? And as we go through the other cores, why is this any different? And the reason it's different, I think, is that it's twofold. One is because we come at these issues, and each of these conversations that we have in each of these cores are conversations that she and I have had. So, for example,
professionally and personally, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So in this section, I think there's one called, there's a chapter called Costco. There's a chapter called The Garage Will Get Dirty. The Roof Needs to Be Fixed.
IKEA.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
IKEA definitely could make its way in there.
So there's these, you know, sort of, not only is it the professional angle, but it's also, it's all the book, and we'll talk more about this certainly as we get into the parenting section a little bit, is very personal as to us. So it's, you know, we like to think that, there's, I mean, and I do think that there's folks out there who think my friends don't go through this, or I don't go through that.
Right,
whatever it is.
Right.
In fact, there's a chapter in the book called Ass Book. All right. Which is the flip side of Facebook. You know, the stuff you don't want anybody to see, you don't post about it.
Right,
you know, my kid got drunk in the basement.
Right.
I rear-ended somebody, that sort of thing. So yeah, there's a lot of personal stuff and a lot of stuff that comes from the professional.
Right. So in the book, I guess you guys are sharing some of the struggles and conversations you had as a couple to navigate Costco,
yes,
the garage, IKEA,
yes,
that kind of thing.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So
yes.
Along with some tips in terms of how to make it through that part of life together.
Yeah.
And the end of each chapter has a piece called Couples Kickstarters. So based on that conversation, the core conversation for that chapter, we ask couples to read these questions and participate. And, you know, we don't know if they do or not, but getting someone to respond to the question. So we have those Couples Kickstarters, which we think will be helpful to most every relationship.
So what kinds of things are you asking people to discuss or reflect on in this section, right? The building, maintaining of your relationship.
Right.
Yeah. So asking a lot about, you know, are your values aligned? Do you have, you know, differences in opinions about X?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Right. Do you set aside time to talk to each other, to connect with each other during the course of the day? You know, when you argue, how do you argue? Do you circle back and get it done? Is there time that you take apart before you come back? And again, it gets into a couple of the specific discussions. One of my favorite lines, and what I've begun to apply after 31 of the 33 years of our marriage, is if what you're about to say doesn't matter, then just don't say it. Just don't do it. Now, Julie, as a therapist, will take a very different approach to that. But in our marriage, sometimes, trust me, it has worked.
Yeah.
We also give some, you know, give some time to the whole silent treatment idea, where people don't talk to each other because they're mad, and therefore, you know, days or hours or days and sometimes weeks go by where, you know, like two ships in the night. They're just, I'm not going to talk to you till you talk to me, and it's this standoff. So we talk a little bit about that in one of the chapters. Actually, it flows into a couple of chapters of the book. But
right.
Because David really hates the silent treatment. So he wanted to put a lot in there about that.
I think a lot of people hate that. So it's that's a struggle. And then, David, what do you see for people that end up getting divorced around this kind of core conversation or these issues? Have they just failed to put that time in or to handle their communication?
Yeah, you know what? That's a good question. And I think that, and there's a lot of different answers to it. But for me, one thing that I've seen repeatedly over the last few years is folks that have come to my office that have maybe been married for 20 plus years, often closer to 30. And, you know, their kids are up and their kids are out and they're grown, they're in college, they're off in their own lives, whatever it may be. And during that period of time, these two people were very busy managing their household,
right?
Doing what they got to do day to day, taking care of who needs to go where. We need to get the car fixed. We do whatever it may be. And there wasn't a lot of time taken to sort of, you know, manage, water the garden, as Julie would say, of the relationship.
Right.
And so now, so now all these other things are out of our universe, right? And so now I'm sitting across the table, and you start to say, what do I have in common with this person? What do we have to talk about if we're not figuring out who's picking up someone at soccer or whatever the case may be? And so what I see in my office is a lot of failing to pay attention during a long period of time. I think that's a consistency that I've seen for a long time. I really do.
Yeah. And when people come to my office, oftentimes we're working on that piece. So making sure that they're, you know, doing date night. I had a couple that was seeing, and I said, listen, if you come back in a week or two, whenever your next appointment is, and you guys haven't connected, had a date night or had sex, I'm going to send you in the next room and you're going to have to go do it because this is ridiculous. You know, so, you know, just the idea that people get so busy.
Right.
And I always say, you know, if you've heard me talk at all, I have the analogy of your marriage can't be like an elf on the shelf. You
yeah.
can't just put it away and bring it out seasonally and pay attention to it, you know, for 30 days or whatever you do. It just won't work.
Right. Right. And I mean, I always like to think anyway, it's not too late. You know, people may have been together 20 yeah. years and been neglecting the relationship. And unless they get to that point of no return, like we talked about, they can start now, right? They can develop
Absolutely.
These habits. They can grow closer. They can, you know, there's hope.
Yeah.
it's a reinvestment, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's a reinvestment and sort of digging back in to,
right.
to find what it was that got you together to begin with. Okay. It got you to stay together.
Yeah, and it's sort of 2.0, like we're new people anyway. This is something, even if people, like, you know this, even if you've maintained your relationship well, it's always evolving, we're always changing, so there's always
right.
reinvestment that's appropriate to make.
Right,
so,
right,
yeah.
right, absolutely.
Yeah. So what's the next core you want to talk about?
So then we get to money, and parenting follows that. So money, from my perspective, you know, once they're past you're in Julie's office and they've shown up in my office, it often falls into a couple of different places, right? One is hidden.
Yeah.
I didn't know that we didn't have this. I didn't know that we owed this. I had no idea about X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
Two is just a different attitude in how to manage, spend, or save money. And three is just a complete disagreement about what to do with it. Or where to put it, whatever the case may be. So by the time they get to me, there's often a lot of arguing over, he spent all this money on such. He invested money in, you know, CBD oils and we lost all of our retirement account
yeah.
or
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
the case, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of fighting and anger and resentment, over that. And there's a chapter in there where we talk about, don't look for the repo man. Stay away from the repo man. And that
yeah.
comes from a client of mine who literally lived in a beautiful home not too far away, you know, here in the district area. And she, long story short, everything was fine. She went to the gym each day. They had lovely cars, big house, and exercised and went out on weekends. And then one summer morning, she's woken by the noise of people talking outside of her front door and then a bunch of metal scratching. And she looks outside and her car is getting, you know, pulled down the street. And that's how she found about the financial situation that we're in. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then again, as David's talking, some of the same things in my office, you know, money means different things to different people, the way that you grew up.
Right.
What, you know, how, if you didn't have any money, what money may mean safety for you and the different, you know, everybody has different priorities and different ways of dealing with money. It's very rare that two people are exactly on the same page. And David and I have, you know, talked about this in the book. You know, we got ourselves into some financial situations, not great ones. Because neither one of us were good at saying no and pulling back. And
right.
I often think like my daughter and her husband's very conservative with money and he's a planner and she's more of a spender. Well, David and I are both a little bit of spenders.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that, you know, like he should have told me no. He should have said like, okay, you need not to be buying this or doing this or whatever. So just kind of, you know, having a balance. And having people be on the same page. And what really helped us be able to work on the financial issues that we had was we talked about it.
Yeah.
And we faced it head on and we, you know, we did it together. Like our marriage probably got stronger because we had to make some tough decisions and we had to really pull together and turn it around.
I mean, that's sort of a through line between, I think, in all of this is having really good open conversations that are difficult, you know, about
yeah.
hard topics, about things where you might not see
yeah.
things the same. I mean, it's just so important to work in as
yeah,
teammates.
And, you know, Yeah, and we went for several years without really looking at how bad things were. We kind of had this idea, like, you know, it was during that time when that book, The Secret, was out, and it was like, if you envision it happening or working out, it will happen, it will work out. So right. We were operating with like The Secret in mind of, oh, don't worry about it. The universe will bring what we need.
Right, if I want it, I can have it.
That's right.
No, not so much. So yeah. We had to sit down and like we had a really hard talk and we had to gather all of our bills and things that we owed. And we sat down, we were like, okay, we need to cut. And it wasn't easy because I was like, well, you should cut this out. And he's like, no, you should cut this out. And, you know, and so, yeah. And we had some, you know, some tips and discussions about how to do it. And we, you know, we're very, very fortunate. We both have good, you know, good jobs and we've always been employed and able to make a good living. So for us to get out of it, we did it.
Yeah.
But it's not always that easy for people that are, you know, in financial situations that are difficult.
Right, right. Do you have some of those Kickstarters for this section of the book for people too?
Yeah.
Besides
yeah.
Open conversations, what
sure.
do you recommend?
Yeah, sure. So we talk about
the book in front of him.
I just try to remember the questions. Yeah. So you have the, you know, the issue of, is it my money or your money? Do we have separate accounts?
Yeah.
Do we pay for separate bills? Is that something that both people are comfortable with? You know, have your spending habits caused a problem, a conflict between the two of you? What I spend my money on, what you spend your money on, does mm-hmm. try to force me to save when I feel like I'm working hard and I'm not getting, mm-hmm. I don't get any reward for the work that I'm doing. So discussions about those types of things, you know, whether one person is more frugal, one partner is more frugal than the other. So there's, you know, like at the end of each of these sections, there's 10 or 12 that we think questions that will help people. And I'm paraphrasing them,
right,
so that will help people sort of talk about, start to bounce things around. Because these are not, you know, these are not easy discussions to have.
No,
we're
going to
talk about parenting and sex in a minute, but certainly money can be a difficult, you know, any types of discussion about money can be difficult questions, difficult issues for couples, even couples that get along well to have.
Right. Part of what puts these together or similarities is some of the stuff we just can't agree to disagree. Right. About parenting, about money, about sex. Like, they're, you know, we have to find a way to collaborate. I think that's part
that's
of what
right.
makes that so difficult.
That's right.
Yeah. And the other, you know, the other big issue is that you're willing to look at it because, as David said, like with a repo man, like there are some people that really don't know their financial situation and they're just happy going along that way. And it can cause problems in the end. I mean, if a spouse dies, a partner dies, and the other person didn't know anything about how to pay bills or where the money was or those kinds of things. So it's, you know, it's important that even if one person is primarily the, you know, the financial person, that the other person at least has some education around what's going on.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Good point. Hey, it's Jessa. I'm just taking a little break to invite you to my free monthly webinars that I do on a variety of topics that always include an open Q&A session with me at the end. I'm doing these monthly. If you want to hear about them, be invited so you can register. Make sure you join my mailing list. You can go to bettersexpodcast.com/list. All right, so let's dive into parenting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to start? Yes. Dive away.
So this week we were on a morning TV show, and one of the hosts asked us, you know, for us, what were the most difficult, you know, parts of our relationship? And two pieces came up for me. I don't know what David's answers were, but I talked about the time that
I refused to answer the question.
I lawyer talk.
Right.
So for me, we experienced secondary infertility. So we had our first daughter just fine, no issues. And then we had infertility we went to try to have another child and we couldn't. And we ended up adopting twice. And then 9 years later, we got pregnant and had our last child. So when I tell people that we had infertility, people are like, well, how could you have infertility? You have four kids. So that's sort of how it went. But right. Anyway, going through infertility was really difficult. And the other really difficult piece is parenting and sort of in terms of what it does to your relationship and mm-hmm. your family.
Yeah.
And for us, having four kids, and we have two biological and two adopted children, and one of our daughters has severe mental health, behavioral and addiction issues. And that put a lot of strain through the years, starting early on for us, consistently running through our family. And to this day, you know, still causes differences in the way that we, you know, look at things or interact with her. And I think that that's been a really big stress on our family and our relationship.
Yeah.
Is the parenting piece.
Yeah, this is a section, a core of the book that there is a lot of personal stuff in, and that I think some people in fairness might say, well, I don't have that, or that's not in my family, or that doesn't really resonate or connect with me. And that's, you know, that's okay. But what we're trying to do with this, and we come out of it, is apply some of what happened with us to your own circumstance. So for example, there's a chapter in the book, no one brings you dinner when your kid's in the psych ward. Okay. and think, if you think about it, so this was one of those things, right? We lived in a neighborhood with lots of families, and we remember specifically when a couple of kids got hurt in a skiing accident, and there was a lot of concern about how they were going to do and so forth. And
right.
We lived across the street, and there was a never ending stream of cars and neighbors coming
right.
over, you know, with food, with gifts, with dessert, with cards, with, you know, whatever the stuff may be to help the family, which was lovely. And then you toggle over, you know, when our kid was basically yanked off the sidewalk, thrown in the back of the car and taken to the hospital. From there, you know, the joke is we didn't get so much as a happy meal. You know,
right,
there was
right.
everybody would walk by our house and sort of go like this. And so,
yeah.
So the takeaway from this isn't that, oh gosh, that must have been bad for David and Julie, but the takeaway from this really that and it took me maybe longer than Julie to sort of wrap my hands around was that it was more than just us that it was affecting, and it was affecting our relationship, of course, but because we were so focused on being hurt or being upset or being, you know, what are we doing wrong, that we may have missed how this affected our other kids, mm-hmm. you know, and how they were affected by this whole situation. I don't blame our daughter either. I mean,
right.
And
right.
So how did we, as a couple, think about that again? How does a couple take a circumstance and not only make it better for them and try to get through it, but also to try to the unit, the family as a whole, to pull from one side, you know, through it and out the other side?
Well, and it sort of makes it, even if people haven't had the same kind of struggles or to the same degree, parenting is stressful. You know, there are stressors.
Sure.
There are situations that happen if you've got kids, no matter what. And it also sort of points out to me, you know, we're kind of alone in our parenting. I mean, people mm-hmm. may yeah. be there for us. We may have some support. And yet, ultimately, we're the parents and the ones that have to carry this load. And that does put a strain
yeah.
on the relationship.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jules.
I tell parents all the time that come to my office that are struggling with, you know, parenting issues, that there's no manual here. There's no right or wrong. This
yeah.
you're doing your best. You may try one thing and it doesn't work, and you try another, you know, and nobody has the answers. And I think what humbled me as a therapist was that I never believed that just one thing, if you just did one thing this way or use this technique or you know, followed the book or whatever, that it will work, because I was, you know, I was firsthand experiencing, we tried everything and
yeah.
nothing was really working. And, you know, I think it's helped me as a therapist, help people to know that they're doing their best. And you just keep on trying, and that's all you can do.
Yeah, and I think this has got some similarities to the whole money conversation, in that we're all raised differently. We experience different mm-hmm. parenting, different families that shapes our view of what we expect to be doing, what we think is right or wrong. And then and we got to put that together with our partner who's got a whole different training, right? Different
That's
perspective.
Right. That's right. Yeah. There's a piece in the book about one of our kids. And we, you know, our family's Jewish. We were never particularly observant, right? But more from a social perspective and from a cultural perspective than an observational perspective. But I don't know how old she was, 13 years old, give or take, plus or minus. And our daughter said she had something to tell us. And of course, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what's she going to tell us? Is she pregnant? Or is she Jewish? She Julie, you know, we just didn't know what it was. And she proceeded to tell us that, you know, she believed in Jesus. And so, and she's become Christian and she's raising her boys that way. Although they understand, they know about the Jewish faith too. But it was a very interesting dynamic between the two of us in terms of how do you handle that? I mean, and we've all read books or many of us have, you know, the stories about how families, you know, tear apart over a religious issue.
Yeah.
And certainly that wasn't something that we wanted, nor was it going to happen because it wasn't, you know, that ingrained in us. And like I said, from an observational standpoint, but again, it was an area where, you know, she and I came at it very differently. I took a much more, you got to be kidding me approach. And she took a much, okay, well, hold on. And we found that place. And I think everybody sort of came out of it for the better. And our daughter's a happy, healthy, lovely, amazing person and a mother of her own kids and a business person and a great wife. And it's all worked out wonderfully. So whatever we did in that particular instance, we didn't screw it up.
So David, what do you see in your office around parenting and the people that are showing up and getting divorced? I mean, obviously if their kids are going through some major, major issues that can totally separate people, but what else are you seeing show up?
You see a lot of differences in rule setting, right? A lot of differences in what kids can do, what they can't do in terms of the internet, in terms of movies, in terms of all types of media these days. You have some parents who are bound and determined that their kid is not going to see what's out there on every one of our phones. As soon as you hit a button, you can see it. It's not going to happen. They're not going to see it. They're not going to. And then you have the other parent who says, oh, you know, you're going to grow up that way. You got to be familiar with it. So you see a lot of conflict over boundaries, right? In the special needs world, you see a lot of parents who differ. And Julie and I had this argument and it continues to this day, or disagreement. You know, how do you manage a kid from a behavioral standpoint, who's got certain special needs, diagnosed issues that, you know, one parent says, okay, well, you got to try this medicine and the other one doesn't. And the kid's 6 years old or 8 years old or whatever it is. So I do see a lot of conflict between parents over those types of issues, as well as just your, you know, I don't want to call it garden variety, but more boundary type things.
Yeah.
You know, what did you let the kid do? Why, how could you have left Joey and Bob together on a Friday night and gone out for an hour when they clicked on the TV and watched porn, you know, and that wouldn't happen if I was there or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The other issue that we're seeing that I see a lot of, and I know David's talked about this too, is how involved you are with your kids. And, you know, we have, you know, the helicopter parent, or now they call it the lawnmower parent, where you are peeing through the grass so that your kid experiences no discomfort and no anything negative, and you create a world that's nice and sort of like a, you know, bubble wrap situation. And so if a parent, you know, if you have one parent that's more an overdoer and wants to make sure everything is beautiful and wonderful for their kids, and the other one's like, listen, they got to experience difficult things. And then you're on the different pages, you know, and sometimes it's really hard to negotiate a middle ground or just, you know, one person doing it their way.
Right.
And I think that can break couples up as well.
Right. Right. Well, before, I don't want to run out of time before you're talking about sex.
Let's get to my favorite topic,
you know.
Yeah. Mine too, by the way. So there you go. At least two of the three of us.
Definitely. David was really looking forward to this. He's like, oh, this is going to be a great talk.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to hear it from both sides. I mean, I know what shows up in a therapist's office around this. It's what I do all the time. But let's talk a little bit about what you stress, what your Kickstarters are and stuff around sex. And then, David, I specifically want to hear, you know, how often is sex a part of what people are talking about when they get divorced, and what if they fail to do? So,
okay. So, you know, for us, certainly frequency is an issue personally. And, when someone's, is in the mood for it and the other person isn't, that kind of a thing. We do take somewhat of a humorous approach to this in a couple of places. We have a chapter called "It's Not a Budget Item." You know, it's not like, okay, you did it on Tuesday. That doesn't mean you can't do it on Friday. Okay. It's not, there's not like there's only so much in the well. And then to really go to the far extreme, we have a chapter called 2 Minutes in a Tissue. And I'll leave that to you to sort of figure out. But yeah, but in terms of, so in our own life, as in a lot of couples, I'm sure that you see in your office, Jessa, you know, sex is an issue. We talk about pornography and the effects on a relationship on pornography, the good and the bad. Yeah. There's both. And I have seen that in my office, you know, where I have a client who, you know, has regular sex with her spouse regularly. Couple times a week, 2-3 times a week. But for him, that wasn't enough. It wasn't exciting enough. You know, so it was, how do we bring other things in? You know, photography, video, costumes, the things that he would see, on his phone or on his computer or whatever the case may be, and how porn affects us. In terms of my office, pornography has become more and more of a conflicted place for couples. You know, as opposed to the more traditional, you know, she hasn't been interested in me or he hasn't been interested in me since 1993. Or we haven't had sex since whenever, or when he has sex, it's like he's still thinking about what's going on in the office, or I'm not connecting. I'm just doing it because I have to. So sex is unquestionably back in my big four.
Right.
And it's certainly in our book, it certainly takes a, you know, front and center in terms of our own relationship, as well as how we see it and deal with it in our particular practices.
Yeah. And I would imagine, I mean, you didn't mention infidelity, but that relates to sex too. And I'm imagining that's a lot of what you see in your office too. Right?
You see a fair amount of infidelity. But interestingly enough, it often isn't the guiding force behind why someone comes to my office. I mean, there are a lot of people who are upset about
it's usually a symptom of the problem.
Right.
Oftentimes, you know, infidelity is not the cause of the breakup, but oftentimes it's a symptom of a relationship that's gone bad for whatever the reason might be.
And I don't know, Julie.
I would say that I see that too, sort of like the issues are usually starting underneath and then you end up with somebody straying. But when people come to my office, they're not always talking about sex, and I have to do, you know, a little bit of digging to find out that, you know, they haven't had sex in a couple years. And, you know, and I always like to do this disclaimer, you know, because of, you know, being a therapist, there are some relationships that are healthy, that are wonderful, that are non-sexual. Mm-hmm. You know, some partnerships and marriages that are fine with not having sex. And it could be for physical reasons that there's, you know, a reason that they cannot have sex, or they've made the decision that they just want to have a sexless relationship. So I don't, you know, I always like to sort of talk about the disclaimer piece. But for the general public, having, you know, people that are in relationships, they generally should be, you know, having some kind of intimate, you know, relations at some point in time. And when it's a long time for most people, it gets to be, you know, negative and tension filled. I know that if we go, you know, more than a week without having sex, he's in a bad mood.
I start to get angry.
It's not good. It's really not good. I mean, this has been the way it's been, you know, pretty much our whole marriage and relationship. And I'm, you know, I just know that he's going to, you know, start to be in a bad mood if it's.
At this point, I mean, I'll just mention to listeners, I mean, I've done a couple different episodes on desire discrepancy where we go into this in a lot of detail because, of course, every relationship has a discrepancy, and then it depends how well you handle that, whether it's causing strain or not. But, you know, common place for people to have struggle. And I don't know if you've heard this or if you sort of agree with this, but when couples when sex is working well, they feel like it's always about like 20% of our relationship, right? It's not too big a deal. It's nice. It's working. It's fine. When it isn't working, it feels like 80%. I mean, in my experience.
That's where I come from. I mean, and she, Julie will say, well, it's not like you're just sticking a key in a door and turning the key and that should be it. And the fact of the matter is that I think that is somewhat right. If, and again, excluding the folks who don't have sex as a part of their relationship for whatever reason. So let's deal with the rest of us for a second, right? And if your sexual relationship is a healthy one and each of you are happy, come on. If I got a room of 1,000 people, you're going to tell me that if those 1,000 people are happy in their sex lives, are they going to say they have a happy marriage or an unhappy marriage? Yeah. 990 of them are raising their hand saying, I'm in a happy marriage.
Right.
I mean, you probably know the science better than me. In fact, I'm sure you do, but I got to believe that is true. It's not like it's the key. I don't think it's the key. But right. I think in some ways it's a gatekeeper almost to a healthy relationship in a lot of ways.
Well, it's certainly a place where to resolve the sexual issues, you have to take yourself on and change enough things that ripples out. Like I see this as a sex therapist.
Yeah.
I feel like people can go to marriage counseling or couples counseling and do all this work. It doesn't necessarily improve sex. But boy, if you tackle what has to happen to really address your sex life, that does ripple out. So I think that's part of it too. Like the collaboration you have to do with a partner so you can both really feel good about your sex life is really powerful stuff.
Well, and I mean, sex is where you're connecting, you know, on a really raw level. And if you're able to do that, then that says a lot for other areas that you should be able to connect with. So I agree. You know, and like I said, his desire, I keep on waiting for it to go down a little bit. It's like a teenage boy.
No.
And I know there's a balance here, but I keep on thinking, okay, he's going to stop bothering me after a while. Like, it hasn't happened. But we feel it in our own relationship and we negotiate and we compromise and I get for him, you know, it's a lot of a physical desire that's there. And for me, it's probably more of an emotional connection. And we have a joke that if he does things around the house and he wears a tool belt, like, I think that's sexy. So he's like, do you want me to get my tool belt on? Those kinds of things. Like, I want him to do things and that I find that attractive in him. And for him, all he needs to do is think about, being naked, and there he goes, you know?
Right.
Yep. So it's very different. It's much more work for me to get in the mood, in the moment. And over the years of our marriage, I definitely have been derailed much more than he has. I tried to explain to him when I was nursing, I nursed two of the babies, and like the last thing I wanted to do was have sex when I was nursing. I mean, I felt like there was babies all over me and my breasts were milk making, kinds of things. And then he's climbing into bed and he's like, starts touching me. And I'm like, no, I don't want anybody to touch me. I don't want to be used for anything right now. And, I can clearly remember thinking and feeling that way.
Yeah, all of this stuff is just so prevalent, right? That's why it's one of the core topics because it's so common.
Yeah, exactly.
So say a word.
It's hard to talk about.
Yeah, it definitely can be really hard.
It is hard to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. So tell people, we got to wrap up, but I want to mention the book's title again, and I know they can find it wherever books are sold. So,
this is the book.
Yes.
It's called The Five Core Conversations for Couples. It's published by Skyhorse and eBooks on Simon & Schuster eBooks. You can get it on all online platforms. A lot of local bookstores are carrying it now. It's an easy book to read. It's 200 or so pages. And you can pick it up and put it down, or you can jump around.
Yeah.
Jump right to the sex section.
Right.
Yep. And we told our children that they should, when they read it, if they want to skip over the sex sections, that's fine too. And we're also, we can be found on all social media at The Bullet, on Facebook and Instagram. And we are actually working on our podcast now. So maybe we'll have you on as a guest at some point. It would be great. And that's going to be called Staying a Couple with The Bullet. So we're super excited about that. And wonderful. What else do we want to say, DB?
On our website, www.thebullets.com. We have events on that website. We love to do book clubs, Jessa. I don't know.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I know you've got a book out. One of our favorite things to do is to connect with people via book clubs, either by if we can make it there, driving to them, or doing it by Skype or FaceTime or whatever the case may be. So
right.
We love talking about this stuff, as you can see. And we take it, we come at it, as you also can see, we come at it from very different angles. So
right.
Hopefully
right.
It's interesting for people and fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time
to
be on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get to know you and question and answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is Patreon. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.